the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the wealth advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome to the program. Back with more Bucket Strategy Investing. It is a Monday, and we're ready to kick off yet another week with our good friend, and I think an all-around professional guy, Professor Rick Plum. He joins me, Johnny Dean from Lucia Capital Group. Once again, we'll be talking to you about your money. Now, coming up this hour, we got a lot of stuff to cover, but we're going to talk first up about when you should take your Social Security. Now, this is not a rule of thumb, okay? You might be reading online. You might say, oh, I read that. I went online and said you should never take it early. Or conversely, you should always take it early. Or something in between that. Now, just to let you know, in case you don't know, you can start at any age as long as it's at least age 62. But when you take it depends a lot on how long you plan on living. That and, of course, a few other factors. So I'd say this. Is it best to take it early or wait till the checks get larger? And, of course, the answer, as always, depends on your circumstances. I think some of the new laws that came into effect or are going to come into effect starting in 2016 and some that have taken effect now may or may not or may very well determine when you take your Social Security. You may have planned to do so at a later age, but now you're just thinking, ah, what's the point? So we're going to get a more detailed answer on all this from Professor Rick Plum. That's coming up here in just a couple of moments. All right, if you need to talk with the Brain Trust right now, got a full bank of phone lines open. If you want to talk about this, anything else related to your money, doesn't matter what it is, you give us a call right now, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Lines are all open, so call right now. You can also email the Brain Trust. Just head over to wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. We'll get your question here in the studio and answer it as well. Professor Rick Plum, Certified Financial Planner, back with me again today, courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. I would suggest that you remember what we've been saying for the past several moons now, at least. You need a retirement strategy. I think we've been pointing this out very clearly. You need a retirement strategy that gets the job done for you, or at least attempts to do so. One that's tailored specifically to meet your goals and your individual needs. You call Professor or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at their phone number, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. You call them to meet with an advisor, ask your questions, get them answered, and get your buckets plan squared away. Again, the number reached them off the air, 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. So some new laws went into effect, Professor Plum, as if we didn't know about it, because doggone it, we mentioned them right here. I think we even called it, or you called it, ahead of time.
Being cynical.
Yeah, exactly. Now, me being more...
You know, optimistic?
I don't even know if I...
Realistic?
Maybe realistic, although it didn't turn out it was realistic, because I figured, oh, come on, politics, what are they going to do? They're going to cut your benefits the year before, a year of an election year? Now, certainly they wouldn't have done it...
Next year.
Next year. But the year before?
But it's always a year before.
Especially when you're in such a rotten so-called recovery?
It's always an election right around. I mean, they're always running for something. I mean, it's just always, anyway,
well,
that may be true.
It's a non-congressional election year, obviously, but it's okay. Anyway, that's beside the point. The point is that certain laws went into effect, cut some of the benefits for some people.
Yes, it cut the options that we have available to us to make it easier. It makes it a little bit more complicated. They did the old options were a little more complicated, but it made it easier to make a decision because it made the for many individuals it made the break even ages less. So you didn't have to live to be 105 to make it worthwhile.
Right.
And so, and now it's just going to make it a little bit simpler to see the options because there aren't as many, but maybe a little more complicated to make a decision because the break-even age is a little longer. And what I mean by break-even age, that's where it makes sense to have either taken it early or taken it late. Where is the break-even age? At certain ages, we're getting, if you take it early, you're getting money early, but you're getting a lower benefit for your lifetime. If you wait, you're not getting any money for a period of time, but you get a higher benefit for the rest of your life. And the idea is, if I were to take that monthly income that I get from taking it early, we're talking about Social Security benefits, take the discount, take the early benefit, and bankroll it. And now somebody would say, well, I can't afford to bankroll it. Well, in essence, if you have other savings, you are bankrolling it, because if you're taking your Social Security early, that means you don't have to hit up your own portfolio as heavily. That means money can stay in your portfolio that would have otherwise come out. That's basically the same as saving it. And so we're looking at, if you were to take money early from Social Security, albeit a reduced amount, and I let my portfolio grow, or I actually did invest the monthly check that I got from Social Security, I would have more money when I'm 70. I mean, if I waited until 70, I haven't taken anything from Social Security. So I've built up a nest egg. I mean, a nice nest egg in many cases.
Sure.
Of money. But now at age 60, to have an apples-to-apples comparison, compared to that higher Social Security benefit, I have to be pulling money out of my portfolio now. Compared to, you know, if in option A, I have my lower Social Security benefit and I built up a nice chunk of money, versus option two, I wait, don't have any chunk of money, but at age 70, I get a much higher Social Security benefit. Well, to be an apples-to-apples comparison, when I get to 70, I've got my lower Social Security benefit in the first option. I have to supplement it with a distribution from that portfolio that I've created. And if we look at that number, where is my break-even? Where will that chunk of money that I've built up in the early years, will it go away? And if so, at what age will it go away? The break-even age. And so when we had the options, the break-even age came down, in many cases, down into the mid-70s.
And it made the decision a lot easier for many people.
That's a no-brainer to wait for
Absolutely.
This, to take this.
Because I'm going to live, I would think I'm going to live past whatever.
78, 77.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but now it's a little more difficult to look at the numbers.
Yeah, it is. We're going to go over some of those numbers with you and talk to you a little bit about how they work and how you might be able to arrive at a decision now that you have fewer options with regard to Social Security and Social Security strategies. So we'll cover that at some point this hour. Wanted to get your give you a little taste of it, though. Our phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. A couple of calls standing by. We'll get to Tom first up in St. George, Utah. Hello, Tom.
Hello. I've got a question for you about a variable whole life insurance policy I started buying, I guess, about 20 years ago. And I don't know much about it, and I'm considering just surrendering it and just wondering if that's a good idea. I bought it as a kind of a policy to supplement my retirement. Since that time, I really don't need it anymore and don't understand it, and was just wondering if you had some advice for me.
Well, what's the death benefit on it?
Death benefit's $100,000.
And how much in cash do you have, cash value do you have in it?
Cash value is about $38,000.
Okay. And have you been paying premiums all along, or did you pay it for a while and stop?
No, I pay $100 a month for about, 20 years, so I think there's about $24,000 I've put into it.
Okay. Well, if you were to surrender it today, and the numbers you've given us are, you know, close, you would have a taxable event of roughly $14,000. So you would, because you put in roughly $24,000, it's worth $38,000. That difference, if you cash it in, is deferred interest, basically. It would be a taxable event as ordinary income. Now, the other side of it is, you know, you sound extremely healthy. How old are you?
I'm 52.
But you do not need this life insurance, right?
No, I've got life insurance now currently through my current employment. I really don't need this anymore.
But that current employment's not going to last forever.
But it'll last to retirement, and I think that's all I really need the insurance for.
Because we just want to make sure that you do not need this insurance before you get rid of it, because the worst time to find out you want some insurance is right after you got rid of some. We just want to make sure of it. Now, putting in $100 a month, it may take several years for the investment component, the $38,000 that you currently have in there plus the $1,200 a year to catch up to $100,000. And so that's what we would look at as far as, it's kind of weird to look at it as an investment for your heirs, because in many cases, though, you're only 52, so you've got a long time left. A lot of people forget that death benefit is tax-free to their heirs, and they surrender policies when they're in their 70s and 80s, when the best investment return they could have received on that $38,000 of cash and the money going in was that life insurance death benefit. On the other hand, 52, you'll probably live to 82, 92, maybe even longer. It's likely that you could potentially create a better cash flow for your heirs and maybe for you in the future. The problem you had with this particular policy, it was purchased to help you as an accumulator to accumulate cash, but the funding mechanism was too low. It should have been funded at a higher level. And so I don't have a problem with you cashing it in as long as you can promise me you're not going to change your mind on how much insurance you need later in life. But understand it will be about a $14,000 taxable event. Now, to avoid that, you could roll it to a different policy that maybe covers long-term care. You know, go from where you're at today to a policy that has maybe a little bit lower death benefit, but also covers some long-term care need, and be able to set that $38,000 aside and basically be done with a good chunk of your long-term care needs for the rest of your life. That may make some sense rather than cashing it in and paying the taxes.
One thing I was looking to do was to, we've got some money in IRAs. I was looking to take the proceeds and maybe convert some of this to Roth IRAs so that I have more flexibility. Also getting a pension, and my wife's going to get a pension, and that's going to cover our
living needs,
cash needs, I think.
I tell you what, hold on a second, Tom. I'm going to come back and talk to you. I got to take a break. You can hold on for just a second. Maybe we can go over this with you and talk a little strategy with you. Is that a good idea? Perhaps taking the proceeds and converting them to a Roth? Well, we're going to find out. So hold on, Tom, if you can, please. We'd love to talk to you more about this. 877-PLANNER, our number. PLANNER. Lines open. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. We're here for you every day. Give us a call, 877-PLANNER. Lines are open. If you have money questions, we'll answer them for you right here on the program. Brain Trust is standing by for you. That's right. Talking about dollars and anything else that's important to you money-wise. 877-752-6637. We've got advice on this program, and we've got advice coming to you through the magic of what? Personal appearances?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Good. How are you doing?
But you got them coming
good
up here.
I have an
in fact, it's not
that's
too
fine.
Far
my
away.
Father,
February 20th
my father recently
is
passed,
the next date in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Small
the Brain Trust will be on tap there. The 2016 Retirement Income Strategy
Workshop
happens starting February 20th. It's a Saturday morning, like 3 weeks away or a little bit less in Las Vegas.
So
join us.
If you're
in Las Vegas, please, we'd love to see you there. Once again, Brain Trust is there a couple times a year.
Probably you and your account.
And then Seattle, Washington happens on Saturday, February 27th.
How many beneficiaries
Phoenix,
are there
Arizona
trust?
After that on Saturday,
there
March 12th.
There
will be more
and the trust
following
out
the Phoenix appearance.
Share for
you can
each
check
individual.
It at wealthed.com.
And
fact,
the assets
that's where
in
you
the trust,
sign up
is there anything complicated?
I mean, or you give us
was
a call
the
here.
IRA, did you make the beneficiary of the IRA the trust? Or not you, but your dad?
Yeah, the brokerage account is, you know, in the trust.
Brokerage account I'm not worried about. I'm worried about IRAs and things like that.
There are IRAs within the brokerage account.
Okay, what you need to do is check the brokerage accounts, check specifically the IRAs, and see who the beneficiary. The IRA will not, it may be part of the brokerage company, but the IRA is not part of the brokerage account. You have a separate IRA at the same company, it's a different account, and it will have a specific identifiable beneficiary. Now, if the beneficiary is the trust, I'd want some help, probably.
Okay.
If the beneficiaries of the IRA are you and the four other siblings or whoever the five people are, then that makes it easy there. That's handled, you know, very easily. It's not even handled by the trust itself. So you need to get an idea of what is actually in the trust, what, you know, it just needs some help. And so your accountant can get you started on all this because they're going to be doing some accounting of what are the assets, what does the estate need to pay in final expenses and other things, what are the liabilities that need to be structured out. But if it's a fairly straightforward, everything gets paid out to the beneficiaries as soon as it's all accounted for, and there's no IRAs in the mix that are coming to the trust, where the trust is the beneficiary of the IRAs, which would, you know, gum up the works a little bit, then it's fairly straightforward.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, Rick, thank you for the call. Help is necessary.
I mean, a lot of it to start with is just accounting, finding out what is there. And as he said, he thinks that the IRAs are part of the brokerage accounts, and they may be in brokerage accounts, but they're not part of the brokerage account that's owned by the trust. Because if you had an IRA that was in the brokerage account owned by the trust, you no longer have an IRA. Because
the trust has,
an account, and somewhere along the line it got changed from an ownership of an IRA to the ownership of the trust. You can't have the same thing. The trust could be the beneficiary, and that would cause some issues going down the line. Your accountant still may be able to help you with that. But what you need to do is, okay, we've got this brokerage account number XYZ that's in the trust. We've got this one over here that's in an IRA. Beneficiaries are as such. So the house is in the trust. The bank accounts are in the trust or not in the trust. Boom, boom, boom. Here's a list of everything that's in the trust name. here's a list of everything that's in dad's name alone, like maybe a car, his checking account, mm-hmm. and just start making lists. What is it that are in the name of the trust? What's in his name alone? And what's in other types of ownerships like an IRA, 401k, retirement account, annuities, and things of that nature. And then now we can start sorting out how much complexity there is involved with the distribution of these assets. If it's done simply, where all the brokerage accounts and all everything's in the trust, he can liquidate everything after paying off all the debts and then just cut a check to the five beneficiaries for 20% of what's left. I would hold something back for a little while just to cover anything that becomes it comes in late, unexpected, that he would have to pay as trustee. And then the IRA, assuming that it has a specific named individual, not the trust, then it's just a matter of letting the individuals know, asking them what they want to do with their share of the IRA, having them either set up an inherited IRA account for their portion of it, and then having the IRA, the decedent's IRA, distribute to those five individuals or however individuals are named, and deal with that as a separate issue because it's not part of the trust.
Okay, so wait, you're saying the IRA that's not part of the trust, it's well, a separate
assuming there's not an IRA with the trust as the beneficiary.
Yeah, yeah.
If the trust is the beneficiary of the IRAs, yeah, you're going to want some help because now you have to maintain the trust for a longer period of time. You're going to have to look and have somebody tell you whether or not the trust is a viable beneficiary that can then potentially stretch the distributions of the IRA, which also means that the IRA or the trust needs to stay in existence longer. But assuming the beneficiary has individuals named, the trust, we can ignore that. We don't have to deal with the trust when it comes to the IRA, and we can split the IRA up into however many pieces that are identified as the beneficiaries, and they can have it all individually and let them deal with it and let the trust, you know, that it just, you just need some accounting right now, then we'll determine whether or not we need more help.
All right, 877-PLANNER, our number. Yeah, it's kind of complicated. I would suggest that if you have trust issues, beneficiaries, IRAs, and you're trying to, you know, separate them out the way Professor Plum is.
And I'm hoping because of the way he said it's just going to be distributed to the five individuals. I'm hoping they name the five individuals, even though it's a little more complicated on the beneficiary assignment form. We hope they name them individually and not the trust. Because the trust can be the beneficiary of an IRA, but generally I would hold that out to being a beneficiary only if I have control issues over the beneficiaries, or I don't trust the beneficiaries to spend the money in an appropriate manner or not spend it frivolously, and I want to control the beneficiary's ability to use the IRA money
after I'm gone.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like this individual had that kind of control issues because he's going to take the living trust and split it five ways right up front. So hopefully he did the same with the IRA. Because otherwise, now we've got the trust has to continue for a long time if you want to stretch out. It also depends on the size of the IRAs. If they're $50,000 and each person's going to get 10, not a big deal. If it's $500,000, $1 million, where each beneficiary on a lump sum would get
a couple hundred grand,
that's a taxing experience.
It is. So you're saying if you have an IRA and you've got a trust or you've got a trust set up, it's better to leave the IRA out of the trust unless you're...
Well, leave the beneficiary.
Don't make the trust the beneficiary. Just designate beneficiaries...
It's all about control.
Whichever way you want.
Do you want to control the asset for that beneficiary? If you want to control it, the trust is a necessary evil. If you're just going to have the money distributed to them and let them do whatever they want with the money anyway, name them directly.
And
it makes life easier. It's not a tax issue at this point. It's just an ease of transfer issue.
Yeah, because now you have a beneficiary designation. You don't need the trust for that particular...
Right. It's just a lot easier.
Okay, all right.
For the beneficiary.
Control can be important to somebody, though.
Control is important for a lot of people. There's a lot of people that have, especially when they're leaving money to maybe not their kids, but to grandkids or even great-grandkids.
And they don't even know them
may only
yet.
Be 16, 15, 12, you know.
And four.
One years old, and they're going to stretch. But how do you know how that kid's going to be able to spend the money?
Well, you don't. And I've known people who have had land in their family, and they want to control it for the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. Do they still have those, by the way?
Yeah, last time I read up on this was a trust could last for what they call life and being.
Yeah.
And 99 years. So anybody who's named in the trust, that's a life of being, somebody alive.
Yes.
And then it can go to successive generations, that even if they're not born, for up to 99 years.
Okay, I didn't know how long, but that's the longest as far as I know.
Today. The dynasty trusts are kind of gone.
Yeah, those were, although I think my family had one set up like in 1925. All right, 877-PLANNER. We got more to talk about, some more on this lump sum. But anything that you have on your mind, you give us a call. Lines are open. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back. Bucket Strategy Investing. Our lines are open right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. I was told some of our streaming audience missed some of the show. There were some technical issues here for the first couple of minutes of the program. I apologize for that. We had some sort of power thing happen here. I don't know what it was. But we're back streaming now, so if you normally listen that way, you can continue to listen there. We just had a couple of emails from people. So, okay, 877-752-6637. We'll tell you in a little bit where the Brain Trust is going to be. You need to know where to meet the Brain Trust, Professor Plum specifically, and others. We'll tell you more about that coming up in just a few moments. But I wanted to wrap this up. We were talking about taking a lump sum from your pension. When do you take the lump sum? When do you take the annuity payments? One of the things you have to consider, Professor Plum, as you said, is your investing skills. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you take, say, a $100,000 lump sum and do better than what the company would give you on a monthly basis?
And what is the time horizon that it's going to take for you to make that worthwhile? Like we talked about before, longevity is key. If you don't have longevity, or the benefit, which, and again, we go back to looking at the benefit, because if it's a joint life between you and your spouse, how long will money continue to happen, whether you're alive or not? It's usually, I mean, when you've got a married couple, between the two of them, how long will this money go, and can you manage the lump sum enough and well enough to make sure that that money is there at the same amount of time for the same, you know, same duration as it would have been just on a guaranteed basis? And so we want to look at those issues. Can you manage it to do that?
Yeah, so that's one, and you said longevity, but of course that would tie in with your age to begin a monthly pension versus the lump sum.
And that's why the pensions are usually larger the older you are when you start them. I mean, there usually is a final date, you know, 65 or something, where they stop, just like Social Security stops growing when you get to 70. Mm-hmm. Pensions sometimes will, you know, you can get full number at 65, but it goes down if you start taking it at 60, 55 or younger, because it has to be paid out over a longer expected period of time. Now, they're not looking at your health history. They're looking at the big numbers. They're looking at, out of a million people, this is what the average is going to happen. So if you believe that you have a better idea of what your longevity is, either on the short side where the lump sum would make more sense, or on the very long side where a monthly pension may make more sense, you can try to work the angles against the pension company.
Yeah, so that's another one. And here are a couple other things to consider when you're trying to decide, do I take the lump sum, do I take the annuity payments off of my pension? The type of pension payout you select. I would think that
life with term certain, there's a lot of terminology that you have to deal. Joint and survivor, 50%, 70%, 75%. Does your pension have a pop-up option that if your spouse passes away too soon, you go back to the life-only option? There's all things to be dealt with in this type of an area.
Yeah, so generally, if you take the one with the survivor benefit, or the, you know, you, where your spouse continues to receive it after you're gone, you're going to get a lower amount, because
unless your spouse is really, really, really old, yeah, they're going to look at the odds of you dying in the next 20 years are X. The odds of a spouse dying in the next 20 years may be close to X, but the odds of both of you dying is less, so it's going to have to pay out for longer because they expect to pay it out longer.
Sure, and actuaries go through this whole thing and they make these determinations, and that's how that works. What about the solvency of the company that is promising you the pension? I've heard that too. You should always take the lump sum because you don't know where that company is going to be 5-10 years from now.
Every company in the United States that has a defined benefit plan pays into the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp. So as long as your pension is covered and the amount of pension that you're going to receive is within the guidelines, the limits that the PBGC, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp, outlines, I'm not worried about the solvency of the company, because even if they go out of business, the pension is in force and it's guaranteed by the government, basically. So the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corp. Now, where you get hurt is if you have a retirement date that is a full retirement date that is younger than 65, because you have to look at the parameters of the PBGC game to be able to know whether or not you're going to have your pension guaranteed or the full amount of it guaranteed. A lot of people point back to the Pilots from 10 years ago who got, you know, basically royally rooked on this deal, where they had a mandatory retirement at 60, but the PBGC had a reduced benefit at 60 because their full retirement age was 65. And so they had to take a reduction in their pension. But not only that, their pensions were way over the PBGC limits. So they took a reduction twice. One was their X amount of pension was reduced down to the PBGC limit, which was about half of what their pension was expected to be. And then it got reduced again because they were forced to retire at 60. So they, you know, they went instead of getting what they were expecting. So you know, at 55, you're looking to retire at 60 with X amount of dollars, and you end up with, you know, 30%
half
of that number.
Yeah, or less.
Less
right
than half. And that's not what you'd planned on. And so it was very difficult. But if your pension was not over in today's world, call it close to $5,000, a little over $5,000 a month at 65, I'm not worried about the solvency of the company because it's guaranteed by the government. And so
yeah,
that's what we look at.
Well, and one last question you might consider is are you ever going to need that lump sum in the event of some kind of emergency happening?
How does the money fit into your strategy? Of course, this presupposes that you have a strategy. We've seen a lot of cases where people will take the lump sum, even though the payout is reasonable, because they want the flexibility of using it at an earlier age. And so they may want to take out of that $100,000 pension, you know, the lump sum we talked about yeah earlier in the show, instead of $100,000 upfront versus $500 a month, they may look at it and say, you know what, I don't want $500 a month. I want to, for the next 10 years, spend $10,000 a year on vacations. And then after that, I'm going to be done. I don't want to do any vacations. I can't do that with a $500 a month pension, so they take the lump sum because of the way they've structured in. But in order to do that, you need to know where the money's going to come from for the long time that you're going to be alive. Do you have other pensions that you took the monthly payment from? Is your Social Security in order? Are you getting enough money from these other sources? And is your portfolio large enough to handle that increased spending in the early years compared to later?
Yeah.
But it's all part of your individual personalized strategy. It's not a everybody does it one way or doesn't do it. It's all about you. I've seen a lot of times, especially with the lower wage earner's pension, where the higher wage earner takes the monthly number, got that in place, the Social Security, got that in place, the spousal Social Security, got that in place.
And they got enough.
So we've got a great fixed income from those sources, and then the lower income, they take the lump sum because they have that ability to spend or not spend based on no constraints of a monthly payment. But if you are in a situation where you've got a minor Social Security or moderate Social Security, you've got higher fixed income, and you've got longevity on either you or your spouse's side, the monthly payment can make a lot of sense. You don't usually hear a financial advisor who gets paid on managing lump sums tell you that, but you need to know the math that goes into it and why it does or does not work for you.
Yeah, what I've found in aggregate here is that lump sum payouts can be dangerous, mainly because somebody gets a big thing of money and they don't generally know what to do with it. Even if it's possible to easily out invest whatever annuity payment they're getting,
it's also easy to outspend the portfolio if you don't have the discipline of the monthly check. If you've got that $100,000, and in many cases, much larger lump sums instead of the monthly check, it seems like you've gone from being, you know, constrained on a budget for all your life to having this pool of money that can never run out. And, you know, taking a little more isn't going to hurt. Well, you keep taking a little more, a little more, a little more, and pretty soon, not only does it hurt, it goes away, and it's really, really painful.
Yeah, it does, especially it could be gone right about the time that you start needing it
to cover
some kind of medical bills.
There's Medicaid.
Well, okay, true. Now, here was just, this was in summation of all this. The question came up, when should you ever take the lump sum up front over the steady stream of pensions? Almost never. The only exception might be if you're retiring and let's say you have a terminal illness. Other than that, take the pension. This is out of one of the online.
I would say today that's a wrong statement.
Okay, why?
With interest rate, the lump sum is a function of the monthly payment that you've earned. With a defined benefit plan, you earn a monthly payment. You don't earn a lump sum. You earn a monthly payment. However, they go through the formula to determine that monthly payment. And then they take that monthly payment based on your life expectancy and an interest factor, a discount rate they call it, to determine what the monthly or the lump sum payment is. the lower the earnings rate, the lower the discount factor, the larger the lump sum. Because if you can only earn 1%, it takes a lot more money to pay out the guaranteed payments for your life expectancy than if you can earn a lot more. So the higher the current earnings rate, the lower the lump sum. The lower the current earnings rate, the higher the lump sum.
That they're going to offer you.
It's kind of like a mortgage. The lower the interest rate, the more you can borrow with given the same payment. The higher the interest rate, the less you can borrow given the same payment. It's the same calculation for determining the lump sum. Where are we today with interest rates? Are we high or are we low? We're very low. And that creates a very attractive, in many cases, not always, in many cases, a very attractive lump sum.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the consensus seems to be, or near consensus, is that you'll never be able to convert that lump sum into a stable lifetime income that you would get from the pension. But
disagree.
Not necessarily sure that we agree with that.
Not 100% of the time, definitely.
No, certainly. Okay, 877-PLANNER. If you want to email us, it's wealthed.com. We got lines open right now, so give us a call. Any money question you have, Brain Trust is standing by. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group, answering your questions when we come back. Don't go away. Market Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. Oh, I meant to tell you, too, you got us on this program. We're available anytime, but especially during the hours of 10 to noon Pacific and 1 to 3 Eastern, and, you figure it out in between. But you can also catch the Brain Trust live in person. Meet Professor Plum. Meet Terry Keyes. And if you've never met any of the local Brain Trust advisors in your area, that's another opportunity to do so. And we have a few opportunities coming up here not too long from now. The next one comes up on February 20th. It's a Saturday, a couple of weeks away, actually less than that, in Las Vegas. February 20th. Sign up now. Room still for you if you want to join us. It's all free. You go to wealthed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com, and meet us, greet us, and ask your money questions in Las Vegas and learn all about retirement income strategies. The Lucia Capital Group folks putting this on. So after that, February 27th will be Seattle, and Saturday, March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three. There will be more after that. If you check wealthed.com and you're listening, you're saying, I would love to meet the Brain Trust. I got money questions and I want to ask them in person. Well, check it at wealthed.com. Find out where we're going to be and sign up when you see that we're going to be somewhere near where you are. And if for some reason we're not, give us a call and say, hey, come on out. We'd love to see you here. That's how we do things. Okay, 877-PLANNER, again, our number. We do have lines open, 877-752-6637. Emails at that aforementioned wealthed.com email or website, email address there. This is from Sherry in Levine, Arizona. She sent a couple of emails. This one first. I had to leave a job I loved, she says, after being permanently disabled due to an accident and had been on SSI since the 90s. I'm 58. My 62-year-old husband is our sole income. But what happens if when I reach age 65? Do I still receive disability payments plus whatever Uncle Sam collected from me for the 20 years I was working? What happens? Thank you. I've learned a lot from your show and listen every chance I get.
My guess is that you're not on SSI. As you're married and there is household income probably over the poverty thresholds that SSI requires. So you're on Social Security Disability, so SSDI. I know it's only a one little letter difference, but it's a big difference in what's happening in your financial life. So assuming you're on disability benefits from Social Security, you worked for 20 years, you paid into Social Security for 20 years, they started paying you a disability benefit based on your 20 years of paying into it. So what happens at 65? Nothing. And 65 isn't the day that it would happen anyway. 66 is your full retirement age. What happens at full retirement age is very little. Nothing is going to happen with the money. The check will continue the same way. It'll continue to get the same cost of living that it would get otherwise. The only thing that changes is the name. Instead of a disability benefit from Social Security, you will now be receiving a retirement benefit from Social Security. You have been receiving a benefit from Social Security based on what you paid in for those 20 years you worked before you were in an accident for the past 20 years, since the 90s when you got disabled. So you've been receiving a disability benefit. So it's not like you're losing anything that you paid in for the 20 years because you're not going to get an extra check when you turn 66. You've been receiving it since the 90s as a disability payment to you. So assuming that this is a Social Security disability benefit, almost nothing changes except for the name. So instead of this, John will like this part. Instead of coming from the Social Security Disability Trust Fund, it'll be coming from the Social Security Retirement Trust Fund, but the amount will be the same.
Well, all they're doing is adding the number, bringing the numbers up in your bank account, and then just lowering the numbers in theirs.
A disability benefit is basically your retirement benefit paid to you early without a reduction. Normally, we're not eligible for a retirement benefit until we get to our age 62. But if we take it at 62, that's earlier than full retirement, we have to take a reduced payment because it's an early retirement benefit. The disability benefit is basically your retirement benefit taken when you get disabled without a reduction. Now, it may not be as large as it would have been if you'd continued to work for another 20 years, because in many cases your 40s and 50s and early 60s are your best earning years, and your best earning years give you a better benefit in Social Security, but you've been receiving a benefit from Social Security based on the money you've put into it for the last 20 plus years.
So they determine your disability benefit by looking at what your full retirement age benefit is, but
they don't look at your full retirement age. They use the formula brought down into today's dirt world. They don't go, okay, at age 66 he would have earned or she would have earned X amount of dollars if they kept working, or
I understand that. So
they use the number of years based on your age to calculate the benefit. And it's like your retirement benefit. But there's no reduction for taking it early because, unfortunately, you paid the price because you're disabled.
Right. And normally, of course, you would have to be eligible to receive benefits. But if you've only been working for 10 years or 8 years,
you have to be working for at least, to get a full benefit for retirement, you got to have 35 years in.
Yes.
For disability, you don't have to have 35 years. They count it on a shorter scale depending on how old you are.
Yeah, so if you only had
if you get disabled at 40, it's very difficult to have 35 years of earnings in the Social Security system.
No, not many people do at age 40.
And so they don't use 35 years of earnings to calculate the disability benefit for somebody who gets disabled at 40. They use a shorter number, obviously. They look at the number of years since you were 21, and they use a specific number based on your age.
Yeah, a lot of the confusion stems from the fact that they call it a disability benefit, which is what it is. Really, though, it's your retirement benefit paid under the...
It's a disability benefit.
Under the umbrella of disability, for the reasons of disability.
But that money that we pay in on FICA, the money that comes out of our check every time we get paid, or as a self-employed person, that big tax that we have to pay every year, that isn't just our retirement benefit. We are not putting that into a retirement account. We're not putting it in there, and that's just a retirement benefit. That is a premium for disability. There's a premium for for life insurance, basically, to provide for survivors, dependent survivors, if we should die too soon. So there's several things going on. There's disability in case we get disabled. So not all the money that we're putting in there is going to retirement. And it is considered an insurance premium. They're insuring you against if you get disabled, if you die too soon, or if you live. Those are about the three only outcomes that can happen.
Yeah, I can't think of too many others. Now, when you say insuring, I mean, they're not really, they're not buying an insurance contract.
No, they're doing it all actuarial. They're looking at it behind, they're self-funding it.
Well, of course, the whole thing, all government programs are self-funded. Okay, I hope that helps you out. We got a few more things to say, got another hour coming up. I had a question on something we talked about last week sometime with regard to ex-spouses and spouses on Social Security. We'll cover that at some point. Also, we had a question on these structured notes that we mentioned a week or so ago as well. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their phone number is 800-644-1150. Off air, 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead of Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives
of and offers securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.